Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
It's about changing the rules of a game in a way that meets young people where they are and responds to their hopes and dreams for the future.
The federal government is betting on a renter's bill of rights, aiming to help young people struggling with the rising cost of living and maybe help its own political fortunes. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner. It's Wednesday, March 27th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern. Also on the podcast, climate change means urban areas will have a big change in who calls the city home. Some wildlife are leaving Canadian centres, while other cities will have double the species they do now. And picking up the pieces after yesterday's bridge collapse in Baltimore.
A lot of the community members actually felt and heard the collision of the boat with the bridge. And so a lot of individuals here who actually watched the bridge being constructed ultimately saw it come to its demise.
It's a targeted announcement with the promise of more to come. Today, Prime Minister Trudeau was in Vancouver unveiling new measures on housing, the first in what's expected to be a series of announcements leading up to the tabling of the budget in just over 2 weeks' time. Today, it was all about young people and people who rent their homes, key groups the Liberals need to win over as their popularity plummets. Tom Perry reports.
Good morning, everyone. Great to be back in Vancouver. This place is a second home to me. I've been back a lot lately.
Vancouver may be a second home for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, but in Canada's most expensive rental market, for some, finding even one home that's affordable is becoming next to impossible. But Trudeau says help is on the way.
Today, we're here to tell you about our first announcement of what will be in our budget 2024.
The Prime Minister today announcing help in the upcoming federal budget for renters. $15 million to fund legal aid groups fighting unfair evictions, a renter's bill of rights to offer more leverage over landlords, and a push to boost the credit rating of tenants who pay their rent on time and make it easier for them to eventually get a mortgage.
Renters matter. And young Canadians put a lot of their hard-earned money towards rent.
Today's announcement aimed squarely at younger voters who are more likely to rent their homes, with Trudeau and his finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, assuring them that when it comes to fears around skyrocketing housing costs, the government feels their pain.
Your frustration is understandable. This isn't your fault, and it doesn't need to be your future.
This Liberal strategy of offering sneak peeks of their upcoming budget is new, but in some ways not surprising.
After 8 years of this Prime Minister, housing costs have doubled, mortgage payments doubled, rent doubled.
The Conservatives and their leader, Pierre Poilievre, have been relentlessly attacking the government with housing one of their main targets. And polls suggest it's working.
I think housing is a big driver in a lot of the change that we've seen in people's views towards politics.
David Coletto, chair and CEO of the polling firm Abacus Data, says concerns around rising rent and home prices have many younger voters who once supported the Liberals now switching to the Conservatives.
Among those that said they voted Liberal in the last election and would vote Conservative today, they are far more likely to say housing is a top issue than other Canadians.
Coletto isn't sure whether government promises and announcements will get through to voters who are deeply frustrated, but the Liberals aren't about to give up, with more pledges, plans, and policies expected between now and Budget Day. Tom Perry, CBC News, Ottawa.
The Prime Minister says Conservative politicians are misleading Canadians about the federal carbon pricing.
For ideological reasons or reasons of pure partisanship, Conservative politicians across this country are not telling the truth to Canadians. And I'm going to continue to call them out and remind them that if they really don't like our approach to pricing pollution, they can develop their own approach.
Justin Trudeau also says those same politicians are deliberately not talking about rebates he says are meant to offset consumer costs. His comments come as several premiers are speaking out against the April 1st carbon price increase at a House of Commons committee this week. More grim news from Baltimore, Maryland this evening. Officials say divers searching for the missing men who were on the bridge that collapsed yesterday have recovered some of the bodies. But efforts to retrieve others have now been suspended. Eight men were on the bridge when a cargo ship rammed into one of its supporting piers. Two survived, the rest unaccounted for until now. Katie Simpson has details from the scene.
The rain seemed unrelenting, pouring down on search crews hour after hour. Between that, the cold conditions, and the dark gray sky, the already brutal recovery efforts became even more difficult. The bodies of two of the six missing men have been found inside a vehicle that plunged from the bridge the moment it collapsed. Colonel Roland Butler with Maryland State Police says the bodies of the other four men may never be recovered.
Based on sonar scans, we firmly believe that the vehicles are encased in the superstructure and concrete that we tragically saw come down.
The victims were fathers, brothers, and one, a soon-to-be granddad. Originally from Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, they were members of a construction crew on the bridge at the time of the collapse.
These are people who went to work to fill potholes and had no idea that this was going to turn deadly.
Maryland Governor Wes Moore says the investigation is now well underway. Officials with the National Transportation Safety Board entered the ship overnight and recovered its recording devices, or what's known as its black boxes. Jennifer Homendy, the head of the NTSB, says these recorders contain crucial information.
Everything from positioning of ship, of the vessel itself, to speed, you name it. We hope to have that information to begin to pull together a timeline of events before the striking of the bridge, immediately after.
It will take investigators weeks to come up with preliminary findings as to how a cargo ship the size of three football fields could lose power and slam into the support structure of a vital commuter bridge. The company that owned the ship, Grace Ocean Private Limited, had a reported history of labor code violations on other vessels. While the investigation intensifies, so too will plans to repair and rebuild.
We still don't fully know the condition of the portions of the bridge that are still standing or of infrastructure that is below the surface of the water. So rebuilding will not be quick or easy or cheap, but we will get it done.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says he can't yet ballpark a timeline for when Baltimore Harbor will return to normal operations. The consequences will be felt across the U.S., as it's the largest import hub for vehicles and farm equipment, and was used by major shippers, including Amazon and Home Depot. The pain is nowhere deeper than Baltimore itself. Rashad Singletary is the pastor of a small church about a kilometer from the bridge.
There's been a somber type of spirit in the community, very devastating. A lot of individuals here who actually watched the bridge being constructed ultimately saw it come to its demise.
The bridge was built in the 1970s and was seen by locals as a relief for the working class, since it dramatically cut commuting times for workers in the harbor. It took 5 years to build back then, and the repair job could take just as long. Katie Simpson, CBC News, Baltimore.
Coming up on the podcast, taking attendance, why fewer students are showing up more often in Canadian classrooms, and the preschool absence of enough childcare spots. Plus wildlife in our cities, more of some birds and animals, less of others as our climate changes. Taking attendance at schools across the country looks a lot different these days. More and more Canadian students aren't showing up for class. New numbers gathered by CBC News paint a picture of chronic absenteeism. CBC investigative reporter Tara Carman reports.
You're going to nap first? Okay, but have you checked your Teams in Google Classroom yet today?
Not
Beth Acton's 12-year-old son Connor blinks blearily from under a pile of pillows. It's a school day, but he's homesick. Beth logs on to the school attendance app to report it.
145 absent periods this year.
And while he hasn't been diagnosed with a chronic condition, Connor's delicate health means he's now struggling to pass grade 7. This leaves Acton and parents like her in the difficult position of choosing between her child's health and his education.
It's tough sometimes to find the right balance, and no matter what decision my husband and I make, we probably always feel we've made the wrong one.
New data compiled by CBC found children across the country are missing a lot more school than they were pre-pandemic. In at least 6 districts, the rate of absence or chronic absence more than doubled. In Newfoundland and Labrador, as well as in parts of New Brunswick, more than half of high school students are chronically absent, meaning they're missing more than 10% of the school year.
There's just been this normalization of school attendance problems.
Maria Rogers is a child psychologist and Canada Research Chair in Child Mental Health and Well-being at Carleton University.
Some might feel that that's not that much school to miss. But what we know is that once we get past that 10% rate, we start to see more adverse outcomes for kids, both academically and socially.
This is particularly true of the elementary years, where CBC found the biggest increases in absence rates.
So when children in younger grades are more absent, even as early as kindergarten, grade 1, they're much more likely then to continue to have increased absences as they progress through elementary school and into high school.
There's no data on why children are missing more school, leaving experts like Rogers to speculate. Most agree illness is one factor keeping kids away. But so are things like bullying, poverty, and mental health. Rogers says the interruption of school during the pandemic was especially hard on kids with mental health challenges and learning disabilities who were already struggling in school before the pandemic.
There's been increased learning loss for some of those children. So you can imagine that that would also make it harder to get back to school.
Back in Montreal, Beth, who suspects Connor may have long COVID, worries about how much school he's missing.
So much of your future is dependent on the baseline that you're setting through your high school, and he's missing a lot of those opportunities by not being in class.
So she tucks him into bed for another day of rest, in the hope that he'll be able to make it back to class someday soon. Tara Carman, CBC News, Vancouver.
Nearly a year has passed since the public inquiry into the 2020 Nova Scotia mass shooting made recommendations to improve public safety. Today, the RCMP responded. Commissioner Mike Duhaime apologized for how his force reacted to the crisis and promised to do better.
We provided the Progress Monitoring Committee the work that we've done so far. As long as I'm here, we're moving forward because I don't want this to have happened from nothing. And if we don't change, we're going to lose the trust of the Canadian public.
Duhaime says the RCMP has implemented 10 of the 130 recommendations. The worst mass shooting in Canadian history in April 2020 claimed 22 lives. The gunman was dressed like a Mountie. He was shot dead by police 13 hours after his rampage started. It's been 3 years since the federal government announced the creation of a national $10 a day child care program. But affordable care still isn't available to many Canadian families. The reasons are many, but as Jamie Strachan explains, part of the problem is the surge in demand for the popular program.
I wanted to continue my career.
For Toronto parent Kristen Lilleman, the prospect of cheaper daycare was a game changer.
Like, I think many families were just so happy for that relief. Like, going from $1,400 to $700 or whatever it may be, it's huge. That's a pretty life-changing difference in a monthly payment.
When her son was 12 months old, she wanted to return to work, and paying huge fees was an unfortunate part of that plan.
I mean, it's substantial, and you just kind of grit and bear it until the daycare phase is over and the kid's in school. You kind of just have, it's like you had to accept it because we had to put our son in daycare.
Since Ontario opted into the federal $10 a day child care program, fees across the province have plummeted, not to $10 a day, but much less than what parents used to pay. Most child care centers have opted into the program, which subsidizes fees, but there's been issues.
So we've seen the wait lists, you know, get longer and longer.
There's not nearly enough cheap spaces, says Carolyn Ferns from the Ontario Coalition for Better Child Care.
There's lots of families that may have wanted to get a childcare space never bothered to put their name on a wait list because they knew they wouldn't be able to afford it. Well, now that they hear that they might be able to afford it, they're going to get their name on those wait lists.
A lack of childcare spaces and long wait lists, a problem in other provinces too. In 2021, Ottawa vowed to create 250,000 spots nationwide with an average $10 a day cost. So far, only about 40% of those spaces have materialized. Morna Ballantyne of the advocacy group Child Care Now says both provincial and federal governments haven't yet figured out how to create more spaces.
Putting in place healthcare services, building hospitals, building schools is a collective and a public responsibility, and governments have to do it. Whereas in childcare, the responsibility of building and creating spaces has been and continues to a large extent be put on the shoulders and backs of individuals, not-for-profit organizations, and some entrepreneurs.
So while costs are down, until more childcare spaces are created, actually getting a spot is a bit like winning the lottery. Jamie Strachan, CBC News, Toronto.
There's been a series of deadly exchanges between Israel and Hezbollah. 12 people were killed in Lebanon after separate Israeli strikes, including one on an emergency medical center. Hezbollah responded with a volley of rockets across Israel's northern border, killing a factory worker in Kiryat Shmona. The two sides have been trading heavy fire since the October 7th attacks. In Gaza, fresh signs of the desperate hunger people are facing. Officials with the Hamas-run health authority say 12 people drowned trying to reach aid dropped from the air into the sea. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre calls the incident a tragedy.
Our hearts go out and our condolences go out to the families. It is a devastating situation. We have to make sure that we continue to get that humanitarian aid into Gaza.
Jean-Pierre says the deaths reinforce the need for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. No word on which country was responsible for the airdrop, but U.S. officials have said the measure is still necessary to bring Palestinians much-needed relief. A United Nations report says the world wasted an estimated 19% of the food produced globally in 2022. That works out to just over 1 billion metric tons, or 174 pounds per person per year. And that's equivalent to at least 1 billion wasted meals every day. Around 783 million people face chronic hunger worldwide. Food waste is also having a major impact on the environment. The UN says it generates between 8 to 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. The urban wildlife we share our cities with could drastically change in the coming years. That's according to new Canadian research. A warmer climate could have cities lose some friendly animal neighbors and see more unwanted pests. Emily Chung explains.
A familiar sound in Toronto from the city's official baseball mascot, the Blue Jay. But as our cities get warmer, some familiar neighbors are moving out and new creatures are moving in, which got Toronto ecologist Alessandro Filizzola asking.
Could we see situations like the Toronto Blue Jay losing the Blue Jay?
His research into that was published in the scientific journal PLOS ONE today, looking not just at the Blue Jay, but 2,000 kinds of animals in 60 cities across North America, modeling where they could live in the climate we could expect by the year 2100. Even a smaller amount of climate change would be dramatic for wildlife.
I was a little bit shocked how even with the lower greenhouse gas emission scenario that I was proposing, there would still be actually quite a fair bit amount of change.
Some of that change is already in our neighborhoods and being noticed by people who work with wildlife.
Possum and trauma.
Some recent migrants, baby opossums, are plucked by the tail from a Toronto window well, filmed by Saman Majnia of Brilliex Pest Control.
We used to get maybe a few calls per year. People didn't even know how possums look like. You know, they've migrated to the north due to, obviously, the climate change and urbanization.
Most Canadian cities, including Quebec City, Ottawa, and Winnipeg, will get hundreds of new animal species thanks to the warmer, wetter climate, where the winters were previously too cold for the animals themselves or for their food sources. Many cold-blooded animals, like turtles and toads, will move into more cities. The bad news?
We're going to gain species that humans don't want to gain.
Like disease-carrying ticks and mosquitoes. Colleen St. Clair is a biology professor at the University of Alberta. She says studies like this help us get ready for the future climate.
I think we need to get much more prepared for the spread of zoonotic diseases.
The study found some cities would lose many species, especially in the southeastern U.S. Animals such as loons, foxes, and frogs were most likely to leave cities. But what about the blue jay? Phyllis Ola says the study can't say for sure whether it will disappear from Toronto, but it will become less common. Either way, climate change will alter the animals around us.
The loss of species in a result of climate change is something that actually is coming literally to your doorstep. The species in your backyard, on your streets, it's going to look different in a few years, potentially a few decades from now.
But how different, he says, depends on how much we do in coming years to mitigate the effects of climate change. Emily Chung, CBC News, Toronto.
Are you feeling those seasonal sniffles already? Well, you're not alone. A mild winter in some parts of Canada meant pollen season got off to an early start. And some experts say allergy sufferers need to prepare for this new normal. Tashana Reed explains what's behind the shift.
Yeah, so we have one of the biggest databases of pollen and spores in the world.
For three decades, scientists at the Aerobiology Research Laboratories in Ottawa have been collecting and analyzing daily air samples. They're looking for pollen, and the counts are used in forecasts. But over the years, they've seen a significant shift. Daniel Coates is the director.
And what we're seeing in Canada over the last 10, 15 years is definitely an increase in overall pollen levels, as well as concentration, as well as duration of seasons.
Coates says based on their data, pollen season is now 2 to 3 weeks longer in Canada, starting earlier and ending later in the year.
And we're going to see more people have allergies than we have in the past.
Some research says climate change is partly to blame for longer seasons and higher concentrations of pollen. Both elevated temperatures and more carbon dioxide in the air helps pollen thrive. This year, warm weather in BC meant an early start to those pesky symptoms.
Our patients were complaining of seasonal allergies starting at the end of January, early February.
Dr. Amin Kanani is the division head of allergy and immunology at the University of British Columbia.
Tree pollen did start very early this year, and it's really peaked in these past couple of weeks.
On the streets of Vancouver last week, many people were feeling the effects.
I get like allergy shots, and so that's like every single week.
I'm all sniffly today, and I blow my nose many, many times this morning.
It's just some runny noses and some stuffy noses and itchy eyes and itchy palates.
It's estimated 20 to 25% of Canadians suffer from seasonal allergies, and the triggers continue for months, from tree pollen in spring, grass in the summer, to ragweed heading into fall. And with higher concentrations of pollen,
the higher the counts, the more you breathe in, the more you feel, the more symptoms you have.
Dr. Miriam Hanna is an assistant clinical professor at McMaster University. She says the shift in allergy season has led to her patients becoming more proactive.
Like starting their antihistamines earlier or starting their nose sprays earlier, just so that they don't feel the impact.
As for this year's forecast, Coates says it will likely be a long season.
But you might see some higher concentrations in the next few weeks, depending on how quickly it warms up and which pollen are in the air.
All the more reason for allergy sufferers to take steps to limit the impacts. Tashana Reed, CBC News, Toronto.
Finally tonight.
I'll never let go. I promise.
It was one scene fans just couldn't let go. In a movie that broke the box office record in 1997, at the end of James Cameron's Titanic, Kate Winslet's character floats on a piece of wood, with Leonardo DiCaprio's character floating in the water beside her after the Titanic sank. DiCaprio's Jack died frozen in the water beside the wooden panel. The scene launched an intense debate that still plays out to this day.
Couldn't Kate Winslet have moved over just a smidge to make room for Leonardo DiCaprio?
Promise me this, Rose.
What?
You'll let me get up on that door with you.
Come on, darling, there's room for two.
What the hell? That door could float with three people.
Yeah.
Well, that prop made of balsa wood, described as having ornate floral accents and scrolling curves, and which allegedly looks like a piece of debris you could see at the Maritime Museum in Halifax, it was auctioned off last weekend for the equivalent of about $1 million Canadian. Thanks for joining us. This has been Your World Tonight for March 27th. I'm Susan Bonner. Talk to you again.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.